to the Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor the Parents Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Welcome to the Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. I'm Lydia Elcourie.
And I'm Cathy Weston.
Now, miscarriage is the commonest complication of pregnancy. The estimated UK miscarriage rate is about 250,000 each year. Doctors believe that roughly 50% of all conceptions never make it to a pregnancy test, and once there has been a positive test, around 15 to 20% of those miscarry before 12 weeks. Most of them will be classified as sporadic or once-off, caused by chromosomal or genetic abnormalities in the embryo, and will have no bearing on a woman's future chances of delivering a healthy child.
But these explanations don't really help, Lydia, if you've experienced a miscarriage, because a small number of women and men are able to brush it aside as nature or for the best, or most of it brings, you know, unfortunately, it brings a flood of emotions, which can range from grief for the lost baby, numbness, emptiness, shock, sadness, anger, bitterness, guilt. There's a long list, and even challenging to the healthiest of relationships. So we're going to be speaking to two guests tonight.
So later on the show, we'll be speaking to Ruth Bender Attic from the Miscarriage Association. She's the director of it, about what kind of support is out there for people who have suffered a miscarriage.
And also, you know, unfortunately, some people go on to have multiple miscarriages, and they're called recurrent miscarriage. So we're delighted on the Parents Show to have the world famous Professor Leslie Regan on the show tonight. She's going to be talking about the condition, what can be done about it. She is the head of obstetrics and gynecology at St Mary's Campus Imperial College Healthcare, and also the director of the recurrent miscarriage clinic at St Mary's Hospital Paddington.
So anybody who has been unfortunate enough to be touched by this issue will know Dr. Regan's name, and we're delighted to have the opportunity to put your questions to Dr. Regan. So if you have any, drop us a line on Facebook, go to the Parents Show Facebook page and put a question in there, or email us on parentshow@radioverulam.com, or call us on 01727 839 926. This is a unique opportunity to get your questions put directly to Professor Regan, and we'll be delighted to field them on for you. So we'll be speaking to Professor Regan just after the next song. So stay with us.
Friendly Radio. We're Radio Verulam in West Harts.
Thank you for joining us on the Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. Now, as promised, tonight we're talking about miscarriage, and specifically about recurrent miscarriage. And we're delighted to say that we have one of the most renowned experts in the world on the line to speak to us about it. We have Professor Leslie Regan, who's the head of obstetrics and gynaecology at St Mary's Campus Imperial College Healthcare, and she's also the director of the recurrent miscarriage clinic at St Mary's Hospital in Paddington, which is now the largest miscarriage clinic in the world, and it's designed specifically to help couples all over the UK who've had three or more consecutive miscarriages. Professor Regan and her team receive 1,000 referrals a year, and a hefty proportion of the 6,000 couples who suffer recurrent miscarriage. Now, recurrent miscarriage affects 1% of all couples trying for a child, although in the US and in Europe, recurrent is extended to two consecutive miscarriages, which means 1 in 20 couples can request an investigation. Professor Regan has been at the NHS clinic since it started 20 years ago and has built a worldwide reputation for both research and medical breakthroughs. She's also written a few books, Your Pregnancy Week by Week, Miscarriage, What Every Woman Needs to Know, and I'm Pregnant. Now, we're delighted to have you on the show, Professor Regan. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, it's I know for anybody who even has had the misfortune to know the word miscarriage in any kind of depth, they know your name. So it really is fantastic for us to be able to put our questions directly to you. Professor Regan, what exactly is recurrent miscarriage?
Well, this is a problem in which women will lose their babies repeatedly, and it can occur at any stage in pregnancy. But it's most common to occur in the first trimester, so that's from the time of the positive pregnancy test up until about 12 weeks. So that's what we refer to as early miscarriage. And an enormous number of pregnancies do miscarry, and one of the mysteries for us in women's medicine or women's health is to try and understand why it is that human beings are so wasteful when it comes to reproducing, but we are. We do it very badly. But this clinic as you've just been suggesting in your very helpful introduction, is all about trying to find underlying causes that we can do something about. And I think I need to emphasise there that many, many cases that I will see this next year, in 2013, will be couples who arrived in the clinic because they've had bad luck. And I can't change that. I can't change the fact that so many of these pregnancies are lost because they're chromosomally or genetically abnormal. But what we can do is look for telltale signs that might suggest that there are some couples who come to this clinic because they've had repeated pregnancy losses, because there's an underlying problem that's likely to mean that a normal embryo, a genetically normal embryo, can't make it through to the second or the third trimester. And that's really what this clinic is all about.
And I suppose anybody who gets to your clinic and the conclusion is that it's bad luck, it's probably actually not the worst news in the world, because...
Well, you're absolutely right. You've hit the nail on the head there. Well done. Because, in fact, what I want to be able to tell you if you come to see me is actually there is nothing wrong. And as you say, you've had bad luck. It doesn't mean I'm not sympathetic that you've had bad luck. But it's much better that you've had the bad luck rather than there being an underlying cause. Because, and this is the biggest challenge I have every week when I'm in the clinics, explaining to someone who's just gone through the trauma of losing many babies in a row, it's quite difficult to get them to buy into the concept that not having a problem is a good thing, because they think when they first come to the clinic or they're referred by somebody else that I'm going to wave a magic wand, discover that there's something terribly wrong and find a magical cure, and then it's all going to be tickety-boo. And the problem is that even if I do find something wrong, and even if I have got a magical cure for it, it doesn't make you immune from having a miscarriage due to a random cause, like having just a genetically abnormal embryo that time. So it really is better not to have an underlying problem.
Yeah.
But there we go. That's the conversation I have every week of my life on many, many occasions with people. And sometimes I win the argument, or not win the argument, but persuade them. Feel positively, and other times I fail.
And I can imagine that why people are thinking that. They think if you find the problem, then you'll find the solution. And if there is no problem, then is there a solution? I can imagine that's the kind
of psychology. Absolutely. Because, you know, it's a logical thought process. You can't fault people, fault people for having a logical thought process. But, you know, as I said, human reproduction is really very wasteful, and we're not very good at it. And so on this occasion, it is better really to come to my clinic and not to have a serious underlying cause for the problem, but to have got there because you've had bad luck because the embryos are chromosomally abnormal.
And Professor Egan, you mentioned, you know, the chromosomal abnormalities as a sort of a reason why the body may do that. But if we've experienced miscarriage, you often think, what have I done? What could I possibly do better? Could I eat better? Should I have exercised less? Should I not have gone for that jog or that canoe ride?
I think that's one of the other roles that I think this clinic has of really, really great value, and that is trying to get women to understand, by becoming more knowledgeable about themselves and about the subject, that actually what they've done is not going to have any influence at all. The fact that you went for a jog, or you rode a horse, or you fell over and bashed your tummy when you were 9 or 10 weeks pregnant is not going to make a jot of difference. And, you know, a chromosome in your genetically normal embryo is usually incredibly tenacious and capable of hanging on in there. And I think possibly what I would like to be able to say when I retire is not that we cured thousands and thousands of people, or we did these we made all these clever research discoveries. I think what I'd like people to remember about my time running the miscarriage service is that I helped empower women to look after themselves. So if you have knowledge about what's going on in your body and a bit of knowledge about miscarriage, it's confidence that is quite invaluable. I can't put a price on it. If you're going to start your next pregnancy knowing a lot more, feeling a lot more confident and sure about yourself, and able to, if you like, identify and decipher all the things that are happening to you with a great deal more positivity. And that's really, really important, which is why that funny little old paperback that you referred to, that miscarriage, what every woman needs to know, it still keeps selling. It's awfully old now. And I still get a letter at least once a week from somebody I don't know who starts this letter saying, "You've never met me, and thanks to the fact I now feel so knowledgeable about the problem, you're never going to." And for me, that's a real, real, real compliment.
Yeah.
That actually that woman is now back in charge of her life. And that's probably one of the most important things that my team do, is actually push women, not do wonderful magic cures, but actually get women to the point where they get back in control, back into the driving seat, able to control their own life. And that is only possible if they've become knowledgeable.
And Professor Regan, one of the key things I would say maybe after miscarriage is in addition to the grief, is the terror that you're never going to have a baby. Mm. And I think, what would you say, how does stress contribute to recurrent miscarriages?
Well, that's a really important question. And, of course, if I had the answer, I think I'd be on my way to Stockholm to get my Nobel Prize. And I haven't got the answer, and I'm not on my way to Stockholm. But we don't know exactly how the immune and the hormonal system are all linked together and how they're, if you like, sent off kilter by stress. But every one of us has a personal anecdote of someone we've known or been very close to who said, "Oh, and then this happened, and then she lost the baby." And the inference is always that the awful thing that happened, the stress, triggered the loss. Now, of course, it may be completely coincidental. I don't think necessarily it is completely coincidental. I think there may be all sorts of factors that we don't understand, particularly about our immune responses to things.
Yeah.
I know, for example, when I'm a bit down and feeling a bit under the weather, I'll get a cold sore or I'll get a big spot or something like that. You know, that is something about my immune system that's not working quite well. So I think you can extrapolate that sort of example to a pregnancy and things and stress. But we don't know what all the factors are. But what I would say to every woman who's listening tonight, who's worried about miscarriage or worried about someone else who's miscarried, is that from 20 years of sitting in my clinic and running trials and experimenting with new tests and ideas and talking to women about their fears and their hopes and their aspirations, what comes back always is that women who join in studies and get involved in those always do better, even if they're not in the treatment group, even if they're in the dreaded what you call placebo group, which is why I'm so passionate about getting women to join studies, because I know from every single trial we've ever run that what always surprises me is not how well the treatment worked, but actually how well being in the placebo group worked, because it actually, I'm sure it provides a feel-good factor that nobody has quite put their scientific explanation to. But it's not just me saying this over a very long period of time. It's many, many workers in different parts of the world who've come to the same conclusion. Pick any continent in the world, and there is somebody who knows something about miscarriage there who will be able to tell you their experience of how women in the placebo group did well. So what I would say, if there's a take-home message, is always find out more, as much as you possibly can. And if someone says to you, "Do you want to be in this study?" Put both hands up, put on your running shoes and say, I'm up for it, I'm coming now. Because you always, always do better.
And what do you think about the recommendation to take baby aspirin? I mean, do you rate that?
Well, I think it's very important that you think about aspirin in its proper context. One of the things that has emerged out of the last 5 to 10 years of research in this field, and I'm very proud of my team because they've done an enormous amount to further this, one of the things that's come out of this is that there are lots of pro-inflammatory or pro-clotting disorders that aspirin and other blood-thinning drugs are very good at treating and therefore improving the live take-home baby rate. But what I want to make sure that all of your listeners understand is that just because you can buy aspirin in the petrol station and in the newsagent and at the all-night Tesco's does not mean that you should be taking it if you don't have a pro-clotting or a pro-inflammatory tendency that's been diagnosed. And there are studies now that have come out of Scandinavia and out of Asia showing that if you just pop an aspirin just for the hell of it, that actually those women have probably got a higher miscarriage rate. So what's really important is that if you're going to take aspirin, you take it because you've been identified as having a pro-inflammatory or a pro-clotting tendency. And you can do that easily by coming to our clinic or going to one of the other clinics around the country and having some tests. So don't take it just for the hell of it. And that's not me wanting to be a purist. It's actually saying there are now studies suggesting that not only does it not do any good, but it actually can do you harm.
My gosh, that's brand new. I didn't realise that at all.
That's important to understand.
Yeah,
so it's a wonderful drug, and I'm a great advocate of it if it's done for the right reasons. But don't take it just for the hell of it. And there are also studies showing that in some cases of women who are taking aspirin just routinely because they thought it might be a good thing, that actually it becomes more difficult for them to get pregnant, because aspirin does affect implantation. So for those that have got a pro-inflammatory tendency, it may be of benefit. But if you haven't, then you may actually be doing something that's positively counterproductive. So just don't expose yourself to a problem you don't need to expose yourself to.
I think that's really valuable advice. And would you say, is it enough to go to your GP and ask your GP, or go further, go to a specialist?
Well, I think you need to go. First, I mean, if you can go to your GP and get a referral to a clinic, that's great. Yeah. And if they're not prepared to do that, or they don't know enough about it, then you need to go along to your local consultant. And remember that, you know, in the last 5 years, our lives, all of our lives, have been transformed by the World Wide Web and the Internet. Mm. You know, women can get on to the web and access all sorts of information. I mean, I get a dozen emails a day from people saying, I just Googled, you know, miscarriage and your name came up. So it can come up that way. Now, the other thing I wanted to say about the web is that you have to be very careful when you're looking at articles that have been posted on the web, because remember, they're not like a journal or even newspaper where an editor has vetted them for truth or veracity, you know, and facts. So you can put anything on the internet. And I'm not saying all the stuff that's on it is wrong. I'm just saying you have to be aware of the fact that you can post anything there. So when you read the banner headline that says, the new 20p cure for miscarriage, this test is going to, you know, transform the whole of miscarriage, you have to think to yourself, really? And why haven't we found that before? And you have to then ask yourself when you're looking at that article, okay, that's super, very exciting. Where's the control group? You know, how was this monitored?
It's the fundamental principles of research that maybe the wider public aren't conscious of.
Absolutely. Yeah. And of course, why should they be? But that's one of my jobs, actually, not to tell people don't do things, but say, well, okay, if you're going to do that, what you need to think about is. And that's, again, why I think it's so important that women, not just in the field of miscarriage, but in every aspect of women's health, that they get as much information as they possibly can so that they can make informed judgments about what to do. I don't think my job is to tell people what to do. As a gynecologist, I don't think I should tell them to do this. When people are pregnant and I'm an obstetrician for them, I don't want to tell them what they should be doing or how they should be delivering. I want them to have really good evidence-based knowledge on which they can base their own decisions. And that knowledge can be delivered at every intellectual level.
Is there any way, Professor, you could summarise for us a little bit of what's going on in the world of miscarriage research? You know, what are the key themes they're looking at? What are they interested in? What linkages?
Well, I think one of the biggest breakthroughs in the last decade or so has been the understanding that clotting disorders are really important in reproduction. And I think our understanding about clotting disorders and miscarriage has actually, for the first time, allowed us to link up all of the adverse outcomes of pregnancy and realize that they're a spectrum. So it used to be that the miscarriage doctors didn't talk to the doctors who dealt with preeclampsia and babies who were growth restricted and babies who delivered prematurely. They were dealt with by different individuals, and we all sat in our separate castles and pulled up the drawbridge and said, oh no, I don't do that. if people from the other camp came knocking on the door. And I think what the work in miscarriage and clotting disorders has demonstrated to us all, in every one of those castles, is that we all need to let down the drawbridges and talk to each other a lot more. Because the women that I know, the women I look after who've had repeated miscarriages, when they go on to have successful pregnancies, some of them are complicated by these other later pregnancy complications. And this is another piece of evidence demonstrating that there's a whole spectrum of problems in pregnancy, which all have a common origin in the quality and the depth of implantation right in the very, very early weeks.
So really you're interested in those case studies of people who've had recurrent miscarriages and a child subsequently, and looking at what the red threads are.
And one of the things that I've done over the last couple of years is with my wonderful colleague Gudrun Moore, who's a scientist and a wonderful collaborator, and we managed to get a couple of million pounds from Wellbeing of Women to set up a pregnancy biobank. And this biobank is collecting blood samples from mothers and fathers. Note fathers, they're usually excluded, but not in this study.
Great.
And babies or miscarriage tissues, so that we can look at the major complications of pregnancy. And what we've decided to collect are 500 trios of recurrent miscarriage and 500 trios of preeclampsia and of preterm labour and of growth-restricted babies, so that we can look at many of the genetic markers. And we believe that what we're going to do is probably find that many of them are interlinked. Already we're starting to find that, which is exciting in itself. But most importantly, what this extraordinary pregnancy biobank is going to do is mean that in future, when a bright young scientist has a great idea, instead of having to spend the next 10 years of their life collecting the samples, they can just make an application to us and say, I've got this fabulous idea, and our research board will look at it, and if they think, yeah, they're onto something here, we will give them the samples so that we can hopefully speed up the research, not just tenfold, but probably 20-fold.
That's fantastic.
And so what we want to do is make sure that it's a totally altruistic project, this. And what Gudrun and I have done is said, okay, in the last 10 years of our professional life, we're going to set up this altruistic project, and we're going to stop all these new researchers having to do what we did for the last 25 years, which is laboriously collect samples, you know, step by step, potting shed by potting shed. And instead we're going to say, here you go, you got the bright idea, we'll give you the sample so that we can really fast track the results from bench to bedside. So, you know that lovely expression about from bench to bedside, from what you do in the laboratory can be translated to what you need as a woman having a miscarriage. And I hope that's what we're going to be able to achieve. And the provisional studies that we've already started are really supporting our concept, which is miscarriage is the first point on a spectrum of pregnancy problems. And if we understand more about what the mechanisms are to make an embryo and a baby placenta implant well in the first few weeks of life, then we'll really have a handle on all those other problems like preeclampsia and small babies and prematurity and all those things as well.
Professor Regan, is there any way women who have had miscarriages but children afterwards, can they contribute to the study as a way of
absolutely.
Sort of...
absolutely.
So can we call up tomorrow and offer our services
absolutely.
As part of a study? Would
we,
that
we
be
never
helpful?
Say, we never say no to anybody.
Yeah.
Everybody's welcome. And often I will say to a couple who are looking a bit doubtful, I'm saying, well, we'd like to take a blood sample for this, something, and the other. I say, you know, you have to remember 20 years ago, when I first started being interested in the phospholipid syndrome and clotting disorders, we didn't have any treatments, and the people that sort of said, okay, we'll donate a sample, have allowed you to be here and have a successful outcome. I don't think that's blackmail. I think it's basically this generation of patients
yeah.
needs to set in motion treatments for the next generation. And that's, that's how life is. You know, life is a payback, isn't it?
And I think if you've ever had a miscarriage and healthy children afterwards, you really feel a sense of duty, I think, to those women that have not had a pregnancy yet that have successful.
Absolutely.
Found their answer.
I remember, I didn't have miscarriages, but I remember when my twin girls, my twin daughters who are now in their 20, I went into premature labour and everyone in the hospital was agog. Oh my goodness, you know. And I heard somebody at the time say, oh, I don't suppose we can ask her whether we can put them into the prematurity surfactant trial. So that was giving premature babies a special drug in their lungs to help them mature their lungs. And I just heard this as I was going into the operating theatre. I said, yes, I'm up for that. I'll sign. I'll sign. And lots of people have reminded me of that subsequently. But I just think it was very important, always very important to always be up for contributing to studies that are ongoing. Because I knew, even at that stage, when I was a pregnant mum on a trolley being wheeled into theatre for an emergency caesarean section, I knew that if I got involved in a study, I'd do better than if I wasn't in the study. And I, because I was enrolling my unborn babies, I thought, oh, they're going to do better if they're in a study, so I'll enrol them quickly.
That's a great piece of advice.
And Professor, the great thing that's come out of our discussion with you today is how much positivity you exude, and I think for anybody who's had a miscarriage, that's what you cling on to, that's what you hope for. And for the most part, you know, taking control and getting things on course for yourself is a possibility. But there is a small number of people who, for recurrent miscarriage, they do actually have a condition. And are there treatments for those too? I mean, people who have, for example, PAPS or other conditions?
Oh, very definitely, yes. And we've transformed the outcome for women with phospholipid syndrome and other prothrombotic disorders, really transformed it. And what I think is really exciting about that field as well is that we now have evidence that women who present with recurrent miscarriage in their 30s and possibly early 40s are more likely to have medical problems such as cardiovascular disease, heart disease, and blood clots and thrombosis in later life. How fantastic if we were able to turn women's health on its head and say, instead of waiting for you to be 60 and have your blood clot or your early stroke or your heart attack, that we could realize when you were 30, because of the way you behaved during pregnancy, that we needed to follow you up in a certain way and offer you preventative medicine. So this is coming back to knowledge again, isn't it?
And it's these longitudinal studies that are so vital, isn't it?
Absolutely. So I don't think that we should be running around telling doctors this necessarily. What I've got now is every woman who we found to be phospholipid positive who's come through my clinic, we invite her to be part of a longitudinal follow-up study, to follow them up in the long term, and so that we know what's happening to them. And I hope that, you know, in 5 years' time, we'll be publishing studies and reports which demonstrate what's happened to the women we've been looking after. And we can then tell women, advise them about what they should be doing about their own health. Again, no, I'm not telling doctors what to do here. I'm telling the women what to do.
Professor,
and they need to be going out there positively accessing their own healthcare.
While we've been on there, we've got a couple of texts. I feel like I do have to read them out because people have asked. And would you mind? The first one is about missed miscarriage. Someone has mentioned that they've had a missed miscarriage. Is that the same as miscarriage?
Yes, a missed miscarriage means that the pregnancy has died, but possibly the usual possibly it hasn't declared itself in terms of bleeding, pain and expelling. So the woman may have gone along, had an ultrasound scan and found that the pregnancy is no longer ongoing, but didn't actually realise that she was no longer actively pregnant.
Okay, thank you. And also the second question is about water, the role of dehydration in miscarriage.
Well, I mean, anyone that's seriously unwell is more likely to miscarry than somebody who is well, but I don't think I know of any studies that say that dehydration that we would sort of meet in the Western world is going to necessarily be a problem.
Okay, thank you.
That's great. Professor Regan, I feel like we're taking a lot of your time now, so we're just going to round it up now. Just what is your opinion on acupuncture? Do you think that's got a role in women dealing with miscarriage?
Well, I don't understand how acupuncture works, but I've always been a believer in the fact that since conventional medicine hasn't got all the answers, one should never shut the doors on possibilities. And what I've experienced over my 20-something years in running a miscarriage service at St Mary's is that quite a lot of the women I see tell me that acupuncture has made them feel better about themselves. It's given them some reassurance that they're trying to do something proactive. It's relaxed them and made them calmer and that they felt they have more confidence to embark on the next pregnancy. And I don't know of any adverse outcomes of acupuncture. So I'm not saying everyone should go and have acupuncture. I'm saying that I don't know of any evidence to suggest that it does no harm, and a lot of women have told me that it makes them feel better. So going back to the thing about women being in control, if you feel better about something and you're more knowledgeable about it, I think that has to be a better situation than seeing, as I did this morning in my early morning clinic this morning, several women who were so distressed and so agitated that they become victims. And talking to them this morning, what I was trying to do is not sort of solve everything in a second, but share with them the fact that once they become a bit more knowledgeable about what's going on and a bit more confident about what they can do to help themselves, that they will get back in that driving seat and they will be in charge as opposed to being a victim. And I think that's probably the most important message I can give women.
Absolutely, such an insight, and it's so refreshing as a medical professional that there's such empathy and sympathy in everything you're doing. I'm sure there are a lot of women who will benefit, and men who will benefit a lot from this podcast and from the show this evening. Professor Regan, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Neave
Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Welcome back to The Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM, and thanks again to Professor Leslie Regan from the Recurrent Miscarriage Clinic in St Mary's in London. Now, I'm delighted to say, to complement our discussion about recurrent miscarriage, we have Ruth Bender-Attick, who is the Director of the Miscarriage Association, on the line with us now. Thank you, Ruth, for joining us this evening.
It's a pleasure.
Now, I think you heard our conversation with Professor Regan beforehand,
mm-hmm.
And what your organisation does is a perfect complement to what we've been discussing. Can you tell us a bit about the Miscarriage Association?
Yes, of course. And I should say that Professor Regan is one of our advisors, and it's been a pleasure to listen to her.
She's been a fantastic help.
She really is. We're a national charity that offers support and information to anyone who's been affected by a miscarriage or ectopic pregnancy or another condition called molar pregnancy, another way that pregnancy can be lost. And we do that in a number of different ways, by providing support and information over the phone, through support groups and telephone support volunteers, through leaflets, and through our website. Increasingly, people, I guess, get their support and information online, and it's our responsibility to make sure that that's done in a careful and constructive way. I mean, there is always a problem, as Professor Regan said. There can be risks, I guess, in going online and trying to search for information or to get support in perhaps in forums that aren't particularly well moderated or checked. So we try and make sure that we do that in a careful and sensitive manner.
And from your experience, what are the biggest issues for people who have suffered a miscarriage?
It varies hugely, but for a lot of people, it's the sense that their loss, which to them, for many, not for all, but for many, is a loss of a baby, a loss of a future, of the hopes and the plans and the dreams that they had for that child, that isn't understood or recognized or acknowledged by other people out there. That people might be sympathetic and say, oh, I'm sorry to hear that, but kind of expect you to pick up and move on very quickly and don't see it as anything particularly significant. And that's very hard. I think that's where people often feel at a loss. They've been through something which for them is very difficult and distressing and creates anxiety for the future, and they're looking for others who might understand.
And there's very little, you know, your association is probably the first port of call, because I don't think maybe women think, oh, I'll go to the GP and say I'm sad about losing my baby. They don't seem to do it. You want to speak to other women who've been through it. And I think that's what your association provides, isn't it? Sort of you can pick up the phone and speak to someone.
Well, that's certainly what we aim to provide. I mean, it is important to remember that there are GPs out there who can be hugely supportive and helpful. And if you feel comfortable with your GP for other things you've gone through, you're probably more likely to go and talk to her or to him. And also, some people really do get good support from family and friends, and of course their partner too. But yes, you're right. It's the ability to talk to somebody who's really going to listen, who can understand, and who's happy to listen for however long it takes. If you want to say the same thing over and over and over again, for however long it takes.
Ruth, do you have fathers contacting you as well, or other family members?
Yes, we do. We do. I have to say it's mostly the women who've been through the loss, but certainly we get their partners, most of whom are men, but some of them, of course, are in same-sex relationships. And partners can often feel a real sense of loss too. It's not necessarily different, and yet people kind of assume that their role is to be strong and silent and supportive.
Mm, yep. And Ruth, why do you think there's still so much secrecy surrounding miscarriages? I mean, you hear it on the news all the time. I mean, high profile people are going through miscarriages, but yet people just on a day-to-day basis are so reluctant to discuss it publicly. Can you understand that, or can you go through that with us?
Yes, I have to say I think high-profile people who go through miscarriage aren't particularly keen to discuss it publicly either. They often, sadly, aren't given the choice. I think it's partly because we see pregnancy loss as something private and personal. I think for some people it feels very much like they failed. That's certainly not how we would see it, but sometimes people feel that way. And I think it's also because when you do talk to people about it, if you don't get the kind of response that you'd like, which is, I'm really sorry to hear it, you know, tell me about it, you're very reluctant then to talk about it to anybody else, because you might find people saying, oh, well, you're young, you can always have another one, or it wasn't really a baby, was it? It was just a bunch of cells. Or you've had a child already, so you should be grateful for the one you've got. So perhaps those are some of the issues. And I suppose at another level, perhaps people are also embarrassed by the whole idea of miscarriage. We're not, you know, as a nation, we're not particularly brilliant at dealing with anything that's to do with death or grief or sadness. We're not that great if somebody tells us their parent dies or a partner dies. And it can be even more difficult for people to kind of relate to a loss which is almost hidden.
Yeah. And I think there's a few things. There's a sort of the trauma of finding out you're miscarrying. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a traumatic experience for so many women. And I think quite a lot of women, I don't know if you'd agree, but they've experienced it, been told the news or in a very negative way, and a sort of a, as you say, you've mentioned things like, oh, people saying you'll have another baby, or you're still young, or it's just a bunch of cells. And that is quite traumatic, I think, for a lot of women.
It can be. I should say that I think that health professionals are getting better and better and far more caring and supportive than might have been in the past. And of course, all of us are going to come across health professionals who aren't particularly kind or might just be in a bad mood or having a bad day. And that can be dreadful when you're feeling so vulnerable and so distressed. I think the people who often, you have a problem with are either the people who don't know what to say, and so they say nothing or just avoid you, or people, in your family or perhaps at work who think they'll cheer you up by telling you that it's not really a big deal.
Ruth, are you contacted there primarily by people who've had miscarriage for the first time, and or people who've maybe have children and miscarried? Do you find the trauma is sort of, or the grief is different for those women?
It's really hard to generalise. In fact, it's impossible to generalise. We get, many of the people who get in touch with us contact us after their first loss. Sometimes it's after they've had several losses, and they may be miscarriages and also perhaps ectopic pregnancies and perhaps problems with getting pregnant in the first place. And I think it's really, really not a great idea, although we all do it, don't we, to kind of try and compare one kind of loss with another kind of loss.
Yeah.
So that sometimes people will say, well, it's not so bad for her because she's already got a child.
Yeah.
But actually, somebody who's already got a child may be extra shocked by having a miscarriage because everything was hunky-dory first time.
Mm-hmm.
And they may be even more aware of what they're losing.
And may actually receive far less sympathy.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly, and I think that's a word that resonates when in my own personal experience, and you know, from reading other people's experiences online, there's an intense lack of sympathy with miscarriage because, as we said at the very beginning of the show, it's the most common pregnancy related complication that there is, and because it's common, people just expect you to get over it, and particularly if nobody has had any experience of miscarriage, they can't understand the physical and psychological trauma, and to undergo it once in your life is a tragedy, and for it to happen repeated times is, you know, it's every time equally tragic. And I wonder if would you recommend people to go for counselling after that? What would you say is the step? If you're listening to this podcast, you've had one or more, you feel unheard, and the medical professionals that you're dealing with are not showing the level of empathy and support that you need. What would you say people should do, Ruth?
Well, you've put a lot of things all together in one sentence that may not, hopefully, all go together. I think the first thing is it's really important to know that miscarriage isn't always a tragedy, and that for many people it's deeply distressing, but it's not traumatic. And I don't mean to make light of it in that way at all, otherwise I wouldn't be working for this organisation.
Sure.
But some people do just get through it. They accept it and they move on and they get through, and there's always a sadness there, but it's not awful. For other people, when they're looking for the support that they need, they have to figure out what makes sense for them. Do they want to talk to someone else who's perhaps been through it and can offer support and understanding? Do they want to talk to someone who hasn't been through it but still understands in general what it's about? And you could count me in that group. I haven't been through a miscarriage, but I think I'm fairly understanding about what it's like to go through it.
Sure.
Do you want to talk to somebody to get professional counselling, which is very different from talking, you know, from getting what we call peer support from someone else who's been through it? Do you need somebody really to help you work through with you what you're feeling, how you're thinking, and how you're going to get through the next days, weeks, months, or years? Do you want to talk to somebody perhaps of your faith, if you have a faith? Would that be helpful to you? You know, there are all sorts of ways of getting support. And for some people, it's also not talking. It's reading or listening. So, you know, think of all the people who listen to Leslie Regan.
And I know you've got lovely links as well on your website to poetry that people have written or expressing their feelings in different ways. And also to books that you'd recommend. And
yes, and it's interesting. We have one of the things that we have on our website is an online support forum, and it's a private, password protected, and pre-moderated. It sounds like, you know, hundreds of locks and keys before you can get in, and in a way it is, because it makes it a very safe and secure place. But we know that quite a lot of the people who join the forum never post anything on there. They're just reading what people are writing.
Yeah.
It's giving them a lot of support.
I can relate to that, and I know there are other four as well on Mumsnet. There's always been a thread on miscarriage and recurrent miscarriage,
mm-hmm.
and it it is therapeutic to just go in and read, even if you don't kind of have the strength or don't want to acknowledge the fact that you can contribute, but just to see other people sharing their experiences can be so
And to have somebody who writes something and you think, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
That's just how I feel. That can be so, so reassuring and helpful.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, going back to one of the questions you asked earlier about how do people feel after miscarriage, and of course it varies hugely, but for many people this might be the saddest, the most distressed they've ever felt before, particularly if they're fairly young. And they may wonder if they're going mad, especially if other people around them are saying, come on, you should be over it by now. It was last week, for goodness sake. Whereas we know that, you know, for some people it can take months before they're feeling much better.
Yeah.
Ruth, can you just tell us, A, your website, but B, what sort of help do you provide women with, or men? What sort of the main services?
Okay, well, I'll start with the website, which is a bit of a spelling test. It's miscarriageassociation.org.uk, and Miscarriage Association is all one word.
Mm-hmm.
What we provide a number of things. We have a helpline, which is 01924 200 799, and that's open Monday to Friday from 9 until 4. And there is an answer phone out of those hours, and we have some volunteers who offer support over the phone from home when we're not in the office. So people can get support and information from us, and they can certainly get support and a listening ear from our volunteers. We have some volunteers who run support groups and others who offer support over the phone, and those are people who've been through pregnancy loss themselves. We have email. People email us quite a lot to get support and information. And then people read the website with loads of information on there in hopefully not too wordy a fashion. And there are links to leaflets. We've got lots and lots of leaflets that talk about all sorts of different aspects of miscarriage. So that might be, you know, there's a leaflet, for example, called Men and Miscarriage. And there's one called Pregnancy Loss and Infertility. Because if you've had difficulties getting pregnant and then you miscarry, you, as you can imagine, it can be a double blow. We have a leaflet that talks about trying again after miscarriage, because that can be such a scary thought.
Yeah.
And then if you do get pregnant, it can be a very, very, very anxious time. And we've leaflets that talk about investigations and research, the kind of things that Professor Regan was talking about. And we try and keep that information very, very up to date. So different ways that people can get in touch, whether they want to do it directly, they want to talk to somebody else who's been through it, they want to go onto a forum. People use our Facebook pages. There are different ways of getting the support and information they want. We certainly don't see ourselves as a counselling organisation, because we don't have that capacity. And we're not medically qualified, so we don't give advice ever.
Okay.
But we can often suggest where people can find their information and the advice they need.
Brilliant. That's great. Thank you so much. I'm sorry, Ruth, we actually have run out of time this evening. Thank you so much for your advice and your help, and we'll be posting your website address on our Facebook.
You're welcome.
Thanks a million.
So
all the very best.